over to Houston. Who wants to go? No? No takers? It's only a 3-hour drive. Yeah, you'd go, wouldn't you? Hi, my name is Doug Pearson. I'm the technical director of the Rent ISAC. Thanks for coming here. I don't know how many folks here are members of Rent ISAC already. Oh gosh, you guys already know all this stuff. What are you doing here? Okay, who's not a member? Oh really? Okay, that's still pretty good. So the session outline is introduction to Rent ISAC. I'll be talking about that, and then Keith Schoenfeld will come up and talk about membership things. And then we'll have two speakers plus somebody by proxy to talk about benefits from the member perspectives and open it up to Q&A. And I hope, all along, keep the Q&A going throughout. If you have questions, just raise your hand and we'll make it interactive rather than just a presentation. But to start with the presentation, so these things about ISACs in general, there's a national concept about these information sharing and analysis centers. Back in Clinton's era, there was a presidential decision directive number 63 that encouraged the private sector to form up these ISACs to share information analysis. And sensitive information for protection of critical infrastructures. You can imagine there's energy ISACs, water ISACs, chemical doesn't really have an ISAC right now, but financial services, IT, there's 18 critical sectors. Education isn't really a formal critical sector recognized by the federal government, but we have an ISAC ourselves as well. Most of the 18 critical sectors have ISACs. They all participate in something called a National Council of ISACs. So we're one in a group of these ISACs that work towards protection of critical infrastructure, both within our sector and for the national critical infrastructures. Most of the ISACs have physical as well as cyber considerations. As you can imagine, like the water ISAC, they have to worry about quality of water, they have to worry about dams, things like that. But Rent ISAC just looks at cyber considerations. So to dig into us, I won't read this mission here, but rather we'll break this down into some roles that we perform. So the first role is, kind of the general ISAC role, where we have this community that's formed of these trusted security staff at R&E institutions sharing actionable information for operational protection and response. That's a real key word, this operational protection and response information sharing. So we're not about awareness, we're not about policy, we're not about governance, we're not about all the sorts of things that EDUCAUSE does really well. We're about the sort of operational information sharing that you can use in protection and response at your institutions. And in particular, sensitive information that you wouldn't be shared in public forums, like, say, the EDUCAUSE Security At discussion list, things that you wouldn't want to put out there, that you can share in a private community of vetted, trusted people, your peers. So as well as having that relationship in the community, Rent ISAC forms up some external relationships with the other ISACs, US CERT, for instance, other information sharing entities and partners where we can bring information into and out of our community that can serve these others as well. The rest of the team's just now showing up. So there's a lot of what Rent ISAC does that's specific to the members in Rent ISAC, the sharing amongst the trusted members and all this. But then as well, we try to do a certain amount of things that serve the higher education community in general, regardless of whether they're a member or not. We've sent out some alerts that some of you may have seen, lots of notifications of infected machines. We send, lots of those out. And we serve as this trusted partner for research and education with the other, commercial, governmental, and private information sharing relationships. So that's all kind of in the ISAC role. I hinted about the notifications things that we do. That's really what we call kind of a CSIRT role that we perform for higher ed as well. Through some of the information sharing relationships that we have, we get information about infected machines that might be observed through sinkholes or other processes. And we're able to, IP address, timestamp what it was seen doing kind of thing. We're able to take that information and get that to the owners, the institutions that own the specific machines that were observed infected or acting maliciously or whatever. So we get those notifications out. We send about 8,000 of those a month and have touched over 1,600 institutions in that regard. So that's kind of the two basic roles that we perform. It's RENISAC is a cooperative effort, and member participation is a cornerstone of that. We have some dedicated resource contributions from Indiana University, Louisiana State University, and Internet 2 provide funding that covers some of our staff. Then as well, we get a lot of member contribution to the activities within RENISAC. And you can see the advisory groups that we have up there, a Microsoft analysis team, membership committee, services development and operations, and system and tool development sorts of things as well. So lots of member participation to bring all this sort of thing together. And in that, we seek these mutually beneficial relationships. I think a really good example of that, I think, is the folks that serve on the Microsoft analysis team. Not their participation in that team not only brings a lot of value to the whole RENISAC community in higher ed, but they also directly benefit their institution in substantial ways by being able to participate in that team. So, we get a lot of, it's the contributions that sites make to RENISAC oftentimes turn right back around to their institutions with value. Just mapping up, wanted to give mention to some of the institutions that are major contributors in this fashion. I won't read through them all, but you can see them there. And we really appreciate their involvement. So as I mentioned earlier, in the relationships, there's rich information sharing that's happening within the community. Our mailing list is strong, IRC communications. We have a wiki that we want to improve some, but it's doing a little bit of well, but we need to make some improvements in that resource for the community. But in addition to what we can stimulate within the community, there's this external relationships that we're able to structure that bring lots of value into the community as well. And you can see some of those in our relationships with Internet 2 and some of the activities that they are undertaking, EDUCAUSE and the Higher Education Information Security Council. These other private threat analysis and mitigation efforts, things that just different groups that we don't particularly mention names and stuff there, but a number of those types of groups that serve various sectors of industry or may cross sectors in some fashion. The other sector, ISACs, U.S. CERT, NCFT, NCFTA, APWG, those are new relationships that we've established that we're finding particularly valuable as well. So that kind of thing that we're able to bring into the community value from those external relationships. How we're structured, RENISAC isn't a, there's not a legal entity that's RENISAC. We're not like a 501c3, or we're not a corporation. We're hosted by, at this point, is all we are. So the organization is hosted by Indiana University. And then we have financial contributions from Indiana, LSU, and Internet 2, and a lot of in-kind support from EDUCAUSE as well. and I mentioned the member contributions, and we have a modest membership fee that started 2 years ago. Membership had been free up to that point, but a modest membership fee that's $700 a year or $900, depending upon the level of that you join in as a member. The financial principles are just listed there in order to show you that we're not out to make money or do anything. The revenue that we generate from fees directly cover costs that turn around to support services back to the membership. So getting into what the real benefits of being a member are, well, does anybody have any questions up to this point? I wanted it to be interactive, but I'm just kind of spewing through slides, right? No questions? Okay. So benefits, with the participation in the community, and there's a strong amount of this type of sharing, you're able to receive and share this practical and actionable defense information in a private community of your trusted peers. In that community, you're able to establish relationships with known and trusted peers. You can know, persons at outside of your regions. We see lots of strong relationships that are kind of developed within regions, the Northeast, in the Midwest. There's, kind of centered around the CIC and others. There's lots of these strong relationships that happen regionally, but by having a national organization, we're able to, tie some of that be able to develop these relationships and have known trusted peers nationally. Have some access to direct security services, and this will be some of the information sharing, data feed type services that we provide. The information sharing relationships with the external entities that we bring. Vendor relationships, there's we have one so far, and we're probably be seeking some others, but there's a relationship that we have with Microsoft, called the Security Cooperation Program. And in that, we don't get necessarily information more than a couple hours earlier than what might be sent out generally in terms of bulletins and vulnerabilities. But through this program, we have in-depth relationship with engineers, like tier three type engineers within their security response organization. That we're able to take questions and problems and issues from RENISAC members to these teams and get answers and bring those back to the community. We do that sort of thing monthly in advance of the bulletins. We poll the membership for questions that they might have about the bulletins and then take those questions to the team and bring answers back. In addition, we do some educational stuff on technical topics, so monthly security webinars. Beth Young, who's here, runs our what we call Tech Bursts, so monthly webcasts on technical topics that generally presented by members, although we have some external folks brought in every now and then, but I'd say the majority of them are all member presentations. And this last bullet there, the have access to threat information resources data feeds that can be used to identify local compromised machines and block known hosts. That's really, if you can imagine, having access to a large volume of bulk information that identifies known bad actors out on the internet. And then you can use that in various ways to apply in protections for your institution. Say if you were to take domain names and apply those in some kind of sinkhole at your institution, the DNS sinkhole, or if we have IP addresses and you can put those in sensors or in ACLs to block access to these, or use those in conjunction with NetFlow to monitor communications that you might have with these known bad addresses or names that are out in the internet. So we provide a lot of that kind of information which the members can use for their local protections and defense. actually the tool, with the tools that we have and the relationships where we can bring some of this information in, develop some of the relationship with the, some of that kind of data within the community and bring data in from outside partners, and the tools that we're using to facilitate that sort of thing are evolving, and the tool that we're working towards is called the Security Event System, SES is what we call it. And Wes, the presentation on SES is Wednesday? Wednesday, 9:30? So Security Event System, SES, Wes and Gabe both actually will be presenting on SES, which is, it's really a strategic tool. It's, we're investing a lot of time and energy and money into this tool to develop it into something that, that serves as the basis of how we get this kind of threat information resources, data, bulk data, and to sites that they can apply in their local protections, but then also use it in say query fashions, as they do say incident response, and they want to know, you know, what's known about this domain name, what's known about this IP address, and SES will SES/SIF, but I won't get it to complexify it there, but it's a tool that is going to become the strategic tool for how RAN ISAC conducts that activity, and I invite you all to go to Wes's, the guy with the white hat back there, session on Wednesday to learn more about that tool. So in addition to all these kind of benefits, or along with that, there's information products that, that we generate. There's a daily watch report that we send out that's just kind of a situational awareness. It's generally open source data that's consolidated, and sometimes a little bit of an extra analysis put in, and then a little bit of not open source data, say from like our shared darknet system that you know observes activity, scanning activity on various ports and such. So this situational awareness daily watch report. Alerts that we send out, episodic. This wasn't the last one, but what was the last alert? The next to the last alert that we sent out was, say, about the Zeus Trojan. Many of you probably saw that there was a targeted attacks against online institutional banking was the name of the alert. And in this alert, we got that alert to the members, to CIOs, to college and university business officers, and all those sorts of things. So there's this episodic, depending upon if there's a really hot item at the time, and this was, you know, when Zeus, Clampy, the targeted attacks against ACH-type banking transactions provided an alert. So I'd maybe two to three of those a year, maybe, is what we put out. The notifications that I mentioned, and these are the things that we do daily. The, you know, oh, that was 4,000 was the old number. I updated the number on the other slide. It's, you know, about 8,000 a month, actually, of these notifications of infected machines. Send those to abuse contacts at your institutions. The feeds I mentioned, data feeds protection information, advisories that we'll send out, and these are episodic as well. Different than an alert, an advisory talks more about practices that you might want to take rather than alerting you to a particular issue. I think the last advisory that we sent was about open recursive DNS servers and why that's a bad thing and why your institution, if you're running open recursive DNS servers, your institution might want to rethink that, and here are some of the reasons why, and here's some resources as that you can use as you think through this and so forth, and TechBurst webcasts as well, and monitoring from sensor systems that we do. So those are put out as information products that kind of come out centrally. So to move into the discussion of membership, I want to invite Keith Schenefeld up here, who's the current chair of our membership committee.
Can I go back one slide for a second? I just want to comment real quick on the TechBurst stuff. Those are oftentimes opened up for trusted individuals within your university. They actually end up being extremely, extremely valuable, and they cannot be understated as far as their value. So membership. Membership is open to colleges, universities, teaching hospitals, research and education network providers, government-funded research organizations. One point to make in this statement is that we don't necessarily distinguish between private and public as long as you meet these classifications, although we do not currently have any private universities in our membership. The institution is the member. That's important. I guess I need to stand over here for the microphone. That's important because the individual is not the member. The individual is the member representative. So the institution signs up. This was done in part because universities, by and large, cannot fund individual membership dues. And so by making the university the member, the university funds the membership dues, and then the individuals, appropriate individuals, can become members. In addition to that, so the individual member representatives have very specific job responsibilities. So we talked earlier about the operational security aspect of it. Again, policy people, people who do outreach, those sorts of things, governance are not going to be able to apply for and receive membership as a representative in Duran Isaac. And really, the membership committee has been very conservative in the way that it determines membership. There are some people, even recently, that are network people with a security bent who have not gotten in because there are security teams at those universities. So it really is a security team member, operational security team member at universities. And then last, membership is tiered. There's general and exec. And so we talked earlier about the $700 fee and the $900 fee. The $700 fee is if your highest representative is going to have a general membership. If you're going to have a representative with exec, then it's the $900 fee for the institution. But you pay that fee once, no matter how many member representatives you have. So if you have 20 people who qualify for general membership at your institution, you pay a single fee. Did you have something to add, Ken? I'm sorry. I meant for-profit and not-for-profit. My apologies. We have no for-profit universities that are members right now. I actually work for a private university that's a member. So thank you, Ken. My apologies there. Let's see. And the tiers differ in what is shared. So that we have different tiers of sharing information. We have restricted data, privileged data. I'm not going to remember them all. There end up being five tiers. It basically is analogous to the secret, top secret, et cetera, type things that you think about. And then some of the products are shared at different levels. So as far as memberships and reach, as of April 2011, three... What? Oh, sorry, go ahead. The difference between general and exec, and this is better stated on our website, but there are a few things that people don't have access to. So some of the data feeds that Doug referred to earlier that have, I think you said IP, DNS, and some things like that, that you can do some additional operational, basically additional operational data are not available to general members, but are available to exec members. Exec members can serve on committees. General members can't. There's some things like that are not available. And as a general rule, general members have access to privileged use data, and exec members have access to restricted use data. Restricted use data is a much higher sensitivity So when you think about general use data, you may receive that information from Ren Isaac. I'm sorry, when you think about privileged use data, you may receive that information from Ren Isaac, and then you can share that with appropriate individuals in your institution that have a need to know in order to provide a protection response. With restricted data, which is largely shared in EXEC, in fact, all EXEC data is default classified restricted, you must formulate that protective response action yourself and then inform people or guide people to implement it. So there's different levels of sharing. I can't hear you. Can you step up to the microphone so everybody can hear you? Sorry.
So if my institution is a member, then I can just join as an individual?
So if your institution is a member, it will have a management representative who is assigned. If you don't know who that management representative is, then you can contact the membership committee, which is membership@renisac.net. We'll let you know who that management representative is. But that management representative for your institution, the one who signed up and paid the $700 or $900 bill, has to log in and nominate you for membership. And he's going to have to confirm that you have the appropriate job duties as well, the operational security job duties as well. So.
And a question from the online group, can the CIO be a member?
There are CIOs that are members as long as they have an operational security response duty. If, for example, you have a CISO and a CIO that are peers, the CIO likely does not qualify because he's not performing the operational response type duties. But in the case where your security group works up through your CIO, in several cases, CIOs do qualify. I will. So the question was, at some universities are so large that colleges have their own security teams, and do we allow colleges to become members as opposed to just universities? As a general rule, it is an institution-wide responsibility. The institution-wide responsibility is a requirement for NISAC membership. If the colleges you're speaking of have a completely separate reporting chain, are significantly independent, then in some cases we have made exceptions to that rule. One very good example of that is there are many hospitals, teaching hospitals, which are separate from the university institution because they're completely separate. Since institutions are public information, I can name names, right? So at the University of Illinois, for example, NCSA is a separate member from the Urbana-Champaign campus, even though NCSA is to some degree a department within the Urbana-Champaign campus. So those kinds of exceptions exist, but they're handled on a case-by-case basis for the membership, or by the membership committee, and you would have to send an email to the membership committee in order to get that exception granted. So, and we will, I'm the outgoing chair of the membership committee. Wednesday is my last day in that role. In fact, while I'm thinking about it, Tony Mazeroski, stand up so people can see you. Tony Mazeroski is the incoming membership committee chair. Either one of us can happily answer questions for you, or if you want to send an email to membership@renisac, we can help you through that forum as well. Any other questions? Good. I'm glad we're getting questions. So again, very specific job responsibility requirements. Membership is tiered, general and exec. So as of April 2011, there are 323 members. That's 30 more than this time last year. Remember, members are institutions, not individuals. So we have 323 higher education or research or the other qualifications. And that represents over 483 institutions and 788 member representatives. So what is that, 788, about two or three members per institution. And you can get a list of the member institutions. And so service to research and education goes beyond just the membership. Like Doug said earlier, 1,600 educational institutions that they've sent notifications out to. So those 8,000 notifications that they send out, they don't just send those to RENISAC members. And if you're not a RENISAC member, you may well have seen some of these notifications come to you. I believe they generally come from the Security Operations Center, SOC, at RENISAC. If you're getting those, that does not mean that your institution is a RENISAC member. So if you don't know that you're a RENISAC member, please investigate it further. And again, like I said, each RENISAC institution has a management representative. If you are not currently a RENISAC member, your CIO or CISO, the appropriate upper-level management security individual, needs to go to the RENISAC website, and they can register to become a member of RENISAC, and then they can nominate individuals to become members. Yes? Yeah, go ahead. I figured this out last night, but it was 2 a.m., so.
So in some cases where you have an institution that has a central security team that's responsible for multiple campuses that are, you know, essentially separate universities. Like at Indiana University has 8 campuses, and they're all considered separate universities. But there's one IT organization and one IT security office that has responsibility across all. So those 8 are under one membership because there's one IT security office that's responsible for all. As contrast to University of Illinois, where Keith was until just recently, the IT and security functions at University of Illinois are all handled separately by the 4 campuses, and so each one of those campuses is an individual member.
Thank you. So, I actually just went over this. Membership has to be initiated by a CIO or equivalent, CISO. That person becomes the management representative but has the ability to delegate that role. We have seen in the past some attempts to delegate that down to basically security analysts. We really want the management representative role to be handled by a manager because they end up making management decisions sometimes with respect to interactions with RENISAC. So, again, management representative, he or she then nominates member representatives. Those member representatives, these are some of the requirements. They have to be a full-time employee. They have to have institution-wide responsibilities for operational security, protection, response, et cetera. And then there are the 2 tiers we've been talking about. One is general, and the other is exec. So general just gets nominated by the management representative. Let me step back for a second. If you have a familiarity with RENISAC, a historical familiarity with RENISAC, people generally complain that it was very difficult to get into RENISAC because it required 2 vouchers to get into RENISAC. You couldn't become the basic member without having 2 vouchers from people. They both could be at your institution at the time, but you had to have 2 vouchers, and those vouchers needed to both state personal trust and job responsibilities that matched the requirements within RENISAC. In the new model, which is new as of 2 years ago, there's both general and exec. And in the general, you get nominated by a management representative. If there's any question, it goes by the membership committee. We make sure that the person meets the criteria. We're looking for the operational security response and the institution-wide responsibilities. If we see things like if the job description that you enter is dominated by things like outreach or securing a very specific application, those sorts of things, we'll oftentimes ask you to come back and provide us a little bit more information so that we can understand the institution-wide aspect and the security protection and response aspect. But so you get nominated by a management representative. If you meet the eligibility requirements, then it gets passed out to the membership. The membership has 6 days to dissent, only dissent. So if there's no dissent, then you become a general member. And then you get access to the privileged information, privileged use information we were talking about earlier. To get into EXSEC, you have to be a general member in good standing for at least 6 weeks. And then after that 6 week period, you can send an email to the membership committee with all of the EXSEC criteria and how you meet those criteria. And once we get that email, we again confirm the job description matches the EXSEC criteria, confirm that there are reasonable responses to the different criteria that are listed, and then we send it out to the EXSEC group. This vouching process is different because you actually have to get 2 positive vouches, and one of those has to come from a member who is not part of your institution. So one person can be within your institution, but another person needs to come from another member institution. And again, all of these are at the URL listed. So if I'm droning on, open up your laptop and go to that web page, you'll be in good shape. So as far as, do you want me to go through the references or did you want to do that?
No, we'll get into the testify section.
Let's go into the testify section then. So Bill was first, is that right? Bill, there you are. Do you want to come up and, from a small school perspective, I believe it's Baird College, is that correct? Bard College. Bill Terry.
Thank all of you for coming here. I'm with Bard College. I'm our chief technology officer. And effectively, we have 0 information security staff. I do some of it. A couple other people do some of it. But as far as I'm concerned, the $900 that we spend is sure better than the FTE that we would get for $900. It is really something, and this happened about a year and a half ago. We saw something going on our network. I called the 24-hour watch desk, got a friendly voice on the phone, and said, "What's going on my network? Is that coming from the inside out, or is there an attack coming in and going out? Help me." Now, not too many people, even with your institution, can tell you the source of that. That's the kind of thing that just means a lot. I also know who they look like and trust them explicitly on the end of the phone. There's some real impressive folks working with this, and a good chance to learn. Things pop up all the time. The daily watch report is very important. Things about bots. We wouldn't know that we were infected unless this group was telling us, "You got a machine that's in trouble, you better do something about it." And we pay close attention to that. And when we found out we were paying a little too close attention to it, we had a good discussion with some of the intergalactic experts on bots and said, don't react the first time, see what it is. So we learned a little on that. I'm going to leave a little bit out here, but one of my good friends further up in the state who I helped bring in here says, I'm seeing three systems that show activity from inside to outside. Can you tell me what is going on? Is it a bot? What bot is it? And by what we have done through our darknet and other things like that, we're able to say, these addresses go in here or such and such. This'll help you figure it out. In this case, this guy is one of the top security professionals I consider analysts in the country. But he needed a little help, and just like that, we can get it. So from a very small school, I can't tell you how much it means to depend on these people and have somebody that I can call at 2 in the morning and get some help. Is that it?
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you.
Yeah.
have Marty Maniak from Albany to talk as well. Yes? I was going to do that because Bill mentioned the intergalactic experts. And those are Wes Young and Gabe Iovino who are supposed to stand. They're the two guys. Well, Wes is the one who's acting like he's shy or something. Yeah, the one in the white hat. So those are the two primary security engineers that we have that are responding to those kinds of things and providing the assistance that that Bill talked about. Now, Marty, thanks.
It's an all Hudson Valley show today. Bill and all from Bard and Marty from Albany. I'm the ISO at the University of Albany, which is one of the four university senators in the State University of New York system. We have about 18,000 students. So those of you who are not in Ren ISAC, what do the words poker, RPG, and BC Wars mean to you? Nothing. BC Wars. Those were two gaming sites that were compromised last week, and in each case, over 100,000 IDs, names, email addresses, and passwords were uploaded to various repositories on the internet. And within a relatively short period of time, a member of RAN ISAC had downloaded those, parsed them, and produced a list of all the different EDUs that were represented in that list, and there were over 414. So if you were a member of RAN ISAC, you would have access to that information without having to do anything, basically, and you would know whether or not any of your students were on that list. Today, I got a couple of different alerts. I know I got at least two alerts today of machines that tried to connect to systems that were blocked because we had intelligence from RAN ISAC that identified the system they were connecting to as being a source of malicious software. So that was two incidents today that didn't occur because we had intelligence from RAN ISAC. I also had another alert today for a machine that I know without a doubt was compromised with TDSS, and that was because someone in RAN ISAC had done a forensic examination of an infected machine, pulled a memory dump from that machine, and learned all the different domain names and IPs that those machines infected with that malware family try to talk to. So because of that, we were able to identify a machine on our network that was infected with that particular malware. So that, two quick examples. When you're a member of RAN ISAC, you're basically part of a meta IDS, because there's a tremendous amount of sharing. And what you get is access to context. When you see an uptick in SSH brute force attempts on your network, is it just happening to you? Or are other people experiencing the same thing? Very quickly, you learn that it's something that other schools are experiencing. You get a profile on the attackers. They're all coming from South America. They're all launching this number of attacks on a select number of systems within your network. So it helps you. Not only do you get intelligence, but you get a framework for interpreting that intelligence so that you can make an informed decision about how you should react to what's going on. Okay? So the last thing I'll say is I did a back-of-the-envelope calculation. We had done a cost analysis of what each incident on our institution costs us, and it came to roughly $100 per incident, all right? So if you figure that the intelligence that you get from RenISAC saves you at least one incident per day, that's a very conservative estimate, that's $36,500 worth of savings at the cost of $900. Which is 2.5%. So I challenge your tipping point vendor to give you as good a deal as that.
Thanks, Marty. So in addition to being our primary systems administrator and our primary principal security engineer, incident handler guy, Gabe Iovino back there, was also recently promoted to vice president of marketing. And so, Gabe, check this out. It's about engagement and action. Yeah, I bet they paid a lot of money for that. But that's a good one. You want to say something? Sure, please.
Things that don't typically make our slides, and it's hard to say you'll definitely get this benefit as a member, but I can give you two recent examples where if you were in the membership, this may have pertained to you. In the last 3 weeks or 4 weeks, there was a zero-day vulnerability discovered by some trusted partners, and it looked like they were targeting .edu's. Because it was a zero-day, this trusted partner didn't want to see this information be broadcast to the internet, because then if people were discover it, then the zero day would be known by all, and you know it could cause more havoc. But they said, hey, since it seems to be targeting .edu's, I'm going to share it with you, and if you can share it with the people you trust, we can at least get some visibility into the .edu sector, because it seems to be targeting them. So we took that information, we created an advisory to an alert to the RANISAC membership, put all these really restrictive information sharing guidelines around it, said, hey, here's the information. You can't share this much further, but you know if you have the ability to put in some mitigating protections in your network, you can either stop this or discover if it has recently happened, depending on the visibility. So that's not something that we could share with the EDU sector as a whole, because it was dealing at the time with a zero-day vulnerability that was unknown to a majority of the world, but we could share it with our membership because we have this relationship where you sign these agreements and we have an expectation that you're not going to share this information publicly. That was one. And that happened within the last 4 weeks. And then we had another one where another trusted partner was monitoring one of the top 10 botnets in the world, and they saw some tier 2 controllers talking with 2.edu machines. And typically these tier 2 controllers talk on port 80 inbound, so they're running in a web server, and usually all the infected clients or really the first tier infrastructure would be talking to these tier 2 CNCs. But it's all going the other way out. So I said, hey, you know, why is this making outbound connections to 2 EDUs? Like, that's really weird. So he said, hey, do you have any trusted people there? I'm not willing to reach out to abuse that at these institutions because the sensitivity of what this tier 2 controller is, but if you have some trusted people there, I'd like to know why. So I said, yeah, you know, those two institutions have to be members. So I reached out to them. And within 20 minutes, both members responded and said, yeah, those are Linux boxes hosting updates. So, for example, if that's a Red Hat box, it's probably getting its yum patches, its yum updates from that box. And within 20 minutes, we were able to determine that these machines weren't infected. They were just providing, you know, normal patches for this CentOS box that happened to be a tier 2 controller. So in that case, it didn't actually identify 2 EDU machines that were compromised. It just happened to be that, you know, Miscreant Infrastructure was using those machines. But it's that example of where the EDU sector was able to provide immediate feedback to something that an analyst was trying to figure out why that was happening. And so the next time around, that analyst or his peers, he's going to go, you guys should really work with the RANISAC, because chances are you're going to get some good information. Now, more times than not, when our trusted partners reached out to us and we end up reaching out to you, it's because your machines are infected and you need to clean them up. In this case, that wasn't the case. But it's because we have the trusted relationship and the information sharing agreements and all the thing, you know, the high bar of trust that you have to do to get into the RANISAC, you know, fit member profiles, all that stuff, it ends up really benefiting. And I'm proud of the EDU sector of continuously sharing information back, whether it be within the RANISAC or when we reach out to people individually in that example and say, hey, what's this box doing? Can you carry up some net flow on that box? And can we try to figure this out? It's allowed us to foster a lot of relationships with some trusted partners, and it ultimately benefits us as a sector. So, you know, say you help out one day, then now, because of that relationship, we were to help out somebody. Now the next time they or somebody else they know might be willing to help out the rest of us. So those are some of the benefits that you get that it's hard to articulate on a slide, because we may never reach out to you. You may never have any compromised boxes on your network. So it's hard to say, hey, we're definitely going to reach out to you under the secret banner and help you. But we certainly do it every day or, you know, every week when you look at the sector as a whole. Thank you.
I think in the case when that last incident that you alluded to, I think after you went through that? You came, showed up in my cube, and you were saying, EDU sector really rocks, right? Yeah. 20-minute response to a serious, major question. So Andy Cordy from Indiana University was going to talk, but his plane got delayed. He's probably still not landed yet. He sent along some points. He's been a part of a number of trust communities, and this is by far one of the most active and engaged. The trust is very carefully managed. Intelligence we create can have a larger impact. You know, the more in, the larger the impact we can have for everyone. And something that was mentioned by, I think Marty alluded to it, and I know Bill did too, this idea of costs. And Andy was saying that a lot of universities, you know, the security engineers, when they want to think about joining RENISAC, the security engineers go, oh, gosh, $700, $900. That's a lot of money for the university to join. And, you know, Andy's point was that he really thinks that it's the case that the leadership at the universities, may be more on board with the idea of joining an organization at that cost than you know, what you as engineers sitting might think that's a lot of money. But so if these the value can be articulated, as Bill alluded to, you know, yes, sir. So for the folks online, Bill is volunteering to, you know, if anyone here who's thinking about joining would like to have someone, Bill's a CTO at Bard, he could talk with your executive management and you know, tell them his perspective on it. And I know the other folks who are in our executive advisory group have done that, and Bill's on the executive advisory group as well. So all of those folks, Jack Seuss, Rodney Peterson, Marty Ringel, Brian Voss, and others, should never start mentioning names, because then you never like get them all in, right? But they're, you know, all willing to do that kind of thing as well. So back to the slides. If I was good at this thing, I would have ended with a big slide that said how to join, right? Oh, go back a few. So if you're interested in joining, learning more, that webpage there, renisac.net/membership.html, and or you can email membership at and with questions that you have and so forth. Does anyone have questions now for me or for any of the other speakers? Would current RENISAC members, if you're willing to do so, raise your hand, and then folks who aren't, if they want to, you know, you can. These folks all know what's going on, and they can talk to you about the community and the value. And we'll have a RENISAC table set up just outside the registration table here. And we'll be manning that during the breaks Tuesday and Wednesday. So come by and talk to us if you'd like to. Thanks, everyone.